right, greetings. Welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand. It's show number 82 from the Pine Room Studios in downtown Wheeling. Matt coming to you flying solo. Some of the guys down at the Ignite West Virginia presentation today where they presented our business in front of several different business entities looking to score some capital for continued investments and upgrade the Pine Room Studio. So we're looking forward to the results of that. The guys did really well today. So best regards to them and their efforts. And hopefully we find out in a few hours if we want a little bit of cash or not. So anyway, back to the task at hand here. Flying solo with you until we get Sam here in the last portion of the program. Talk some racing and some baseball, as well as some of the other observations around the sporting world. Wasn't a great week for us again. I've not been very good, but I have identified something in baseball that I think that maybe it could turn into a profitable spring and summer for us if we can continue to fine tune that. And I'll get into that here in a couple of minutes. But it was not a great week for us. But if you played the golf plays, Akshay Bhatia comes on the scene. I really liked him last week, and we gave him out right here on the show. Gave him out on BLS underscore PRP, Twitter and X on Thursday, so you could have got him either on Friday or early if you followed the Twitter feed. And it was a good winner for us. He was 53-1. Some of the places had him 60. I got 53, and at the time it was a good number, but then I ended up seeing after I bet him that there was some 60s out there. So great performance by him. He almost blew it for us. He got in a playoff. He separated his shoulder, had to pop it back in. He ended up winning in a playoff. But Denny McCarthy, who shot 9-under on Sunday to put in the playoff, it wasn't because Bhatia played poorly on Sunday. He didn't come back to the field at all. He was actually 3 or 4 under par for the round. So it wasn't anything that he didn't do. It was just a guy chasing him down from behind, and we were fortunate to escape in the playoff. He had a 3-putt to win it, and he took care of business relatively easily. And, man, it was a sweat, but a good one. So if you include that golf play, we were up over 50 units on the week. So we'll take that anytime we can get it. 7 of our 8 golfers made the cut, which is strong. Heading into the Masters, we need a little momentum. But overall, we were down a little bit over four units in our regular plays. AFL, I was around 500, but probably lost the juice on those games. MLB 1-2, NHL 2-2, F1 2-1, and NASCAR 2-3 for me. Sam had Yuki Tsunoda in the F1 race as well as Max Verstappen, so pretty good there. NASCAR, again, kind of snake bitten that. We'll talk about it with Sam, but man, thought Chase Elliott was going to get the job done for us, but could not quite get there in the closing laps. And Hendrick runs 1-2-3 with William Byron getting the job done. So we're going to get there in racing at some point, but I got some other observations that I want to run by Sam too, as far as just it seems like if the teams who are qualifying in the top five who have the fast cars on qualifying day are winning all these races now. So it's probably even a little reckless to be giving out plays this early, because you got to see how these guys qualify, because the faster cars have won the races. It's not been a lot of strategy involved in these. It's not been fuel mileage. It's not been pit strategy. Maybe a little bit with the Denny Hamlin 2 weeks ago. He won the race off pit road, but he got a lucky break there with the caution that came out when it did. But anyway, we'll talk plenty more racing in the back half of the program with Sam. But up over 50 units if you count the golf. Akshay Bhatia again with a big winner at the Valero Texas Open for us, so we'll take that anytime. College basketball wrapped up finally. College basketball, it was a pretty strong season, but it definitely had some it kind of ran its course for me. I kind of got sick of it. And I'm glad it's over right now. UConn 12-0 straight up, 12-0 ATS the last two seasons. Just incredibly impressive. Dave Portnoy, the man from Barstool, cashes for $2.76 million on a +360 bet. He bet $600,000 on UConn to win it all. They took care of it. But the bigger news, Iowa and South Carolina, single biggest winnings betting event ever at any sports books, 205% increase at just FanDuel, just for them. I saw them without a documented number, but most books, my book included, saw incredible jumps in women's sports for the first time with the Caitlin Clark factor. So it's great. They outdrew the men's audience on the Monday championship game. The Sunday championship game for the women was perfect time. Viewed by 24 odd million people at its peak, I believe, which is just astounding compared to maybe 18 from the men. So Really, really awesome stuff there, and it's good to have it in the books. UConn, much the best. South Carolina, much the best. Iowa girls gave everything they could give, but they're just not quite good enough to be able to pull that out. They're too dependent on the one girl, and you know, Caitlin Clark will be on the WNBA here in a week, and hopefully Iowa basketball doesn't get forgotten about. They got a good recruiting class coming in, so I'm sure they'll stay relevant. DK Better cashes it for $231,000 on a $100 parlay bet. He had Tapira to beat Volkanovski in the UFC. I think that was last week. UConn men to win it all at +650. South Carolina women at +125 to win it all. And Hideki Matsuyama to win the Genesis Open at 66-1. That was one we had right here on this show. He comes from way, way, way back to win it in impressive fashion in almost 70-1. So nice, nice, nice hit right there. But got plenty of Masters to talk about. Hopefully you checked out the plays yesterday, and hopefully we're doing pretty well. This is probably Friday when you're watching this, and you can hopefully see how we did. But some momentum coming into the golf weekend. We're hopeful for that. So put a wrap on college basketball. Won't talk about that until next fall, towards the end of football season probably. So you'll have some portal news and some coaching changes. John Calipari on the move to Arkansas. Interesting move there. Eric Musselman out to USC. So changing musical chairs. We'll see how the portal goes and how teams adjust and see if they can contend with UConn, who's done a fantastic job. All credit goes to Dan Hurley. He's done a wonderful job keeping that program up on top of the college basketball stratosphere, and they are rolling along very nicely, and we'll see what they have in store. Also want to congratulate Coach Kim Caldwell, Kim Stevens as we used to know her, Glenville and Marshall head women's basketball coach. She is now the head coach at Tennessee, which is just amazing. So Lady Vols basketball, hopefully we'll get back on the map. I know I'm going to have a restored interest in that. I always was a program that I respected a lot in the UConn and Tennessee days. Watched a lot of women's basketball back before it was kind of cool to do it, and it was hard to find. You couldn't find it every day like you have on now, which is great to see the game growing. But hopefully Tennessee can rebuild itself back into a powerhouse that it was. It's awesome to see the light blue and the orange out there for Lady Vols in honor of Pat Summitt. So congrats to Kim, and hopefully she keeps up the good work, and we'll be following her here from West Virginia. We've talked to her a few times, Pine Room related stuff, and as well at Mountain East Tournament. So very nice girl, and wish her all the best at Tennessee. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on it. Hockey winding down now. We got about a week and a half left, and man, it's getting exciting. Penguins still in a playoff spot. Not necessarily a playoff spot, but they're in a position to get a playoff spot. They got some key games coming up here. They got a point the other night against Toronto. They got a game against Detroit. So it's coming down to basically a game every other night, and it's going to really maybe come down to the end. The Flyers look like they're going to be done, which is great to see. So the Penguins still with a hope here. Not necessarily controlling their own destiny, but if they win the games that they need to win and things take care of themselves, they should be in a spot. You now have the third position in the Metropolitan Division up for grabs as well. It looks like the Islanders kind of got a little bit of a leg up on that with a win last night over the Rangers. Kind of an unexpected one. The Islanders have been very streaky. Very good, very bad, very good, very bad. So now they're very good again. So we'll see. Hopefully they can pull it out, but I'm a little bit mixed. While they have been a pleasure to watch the last few games, they still lack a lot, and hopefully they'll go back to the drawing board in the offseason and rehash all that. Goal in the first 10, I'm just going with the hot streaks right now, because over the entire course of the season, you have teams who are completely eliminated. You have other teams playing a little bit more nip and tuck because of their playoff positioning. So games being contested a little bit more. They definitely have more of a playoff feel in the games that have mattered. So Buffalo 9-1. Buffalo out of the playoffs. They're a good play on right now. New Jersey out of the playoffs. They're a good play on right now. Goal in the first 10. Colorado's just good, and Edmonton's just good. They're both 8-2. So those are good teams. Score early, score often. Second period and third period numbers. Second period overs. Ottawa 63-14 on the season. Toronto 61-16. Dallas 59-19. I'm not saying play on those teams just because of that, but Ottawa is obviously out of contention, but they are still scrappy, and they still got a little bit of pride, so they're playing hard. 9-1 second period overs. They're on a run with New Jersey, so 9-1 there, and you got a bunch of 8-2s. Colorado, Columbus, St. Louis, Edmonton, Calgary, Anaheim, all on 8-2 runs, second period over 1.5. goals, which is just staggering. Third period overs, Tampa 57-20, Columbus 56-22, New Jersey 56-22. You see New Jersey in a lot of these categories, which signifies poor goaltending and poor defense, and that's what it is. It's not just New Jersey has an incredible firepower. They're on the bad end of a lot of these, so look to be fading them as they shut Jack Hughes down the other day. So Jersey's basically playing for next year right now, and I don't expect them to give much of a fight. Last 10 third period overs, Calgary, Edmonton, Pittsburgh, New York Rangers, that is, Arizona, all 9-1. And then also in the last 10, New Jersey, Columbus, Winnipeg, Philadelphia, Colorado, Washington, all 8-2, their last 10 third period overs. So you got a lot of different variables in there, and these period numbers are very good. Oh, Borussia Dortmund with a big goal here in Champions League soccer. Got Barcelona leading PSG 3-2 on the road. And we got, please don't be offside. Oh, please don't be offside. No, he's onside. Yes. All right, Borussia Dortmund, I needed them to score a goal right there. They make it 2-1 against Atletico. That's a big, big goal for them as they'll head back home to a very raucous area to try to win the second leg here. But a good one there. A couple of great games yesterday, 2-2, 3-3 draws. So heating up here, Champions League soccer. May have a future play on those when I see them get down to the, let's see, they got four teams today, so they're down to eight. So we get down to the final four, may give out. But a few weeks ago, the two Spanish teams that we mentioned, Atletico and Barcelona, both alive and well there. Obviously, the English side's very strong. So Italian ones did not fare well here. So we're lacking the Italian firepower that we had last year, but that's all right. Should be a great, great month of football taking us into the summer, early summer. Always a mark of early summer there. You get the Champions League final usually around time of the Preakness or one of those third week in May, something like that. So good stuff there. All right, so let's focus on a couple of other items. Baseball, before we get into the golf, I want to talk a little bit about MLB. People were complaining about the pitching, about the arms breaking down and things like that, and they're trying to blame the pitch clock, which is just outrageous. Guys years ago threw more innings. They went deeper into games. They threw far more pitches, and they didn't have these Tommy Johns. The Tommy John was pretty rare. I rarely even remember the Tommy John until probably the 90s when it really came on the scene. But, you know, growing up as a kid, that was barely even ever talked about. Guys were trained differently then. They didn't throw curveballs until their bodies were developed, until they were late in their high school careers. Now they're throwing them in Mustang and Pinto almost. Not necessarily Pinto because the coach is usually pitch, but Mustang and Pony and Bronco. They're throwing nasty, too many breaking balls, too much work on the elbow. And that's what's causing this. It's pretty obvious, but they always want to try to blame something else, rules, because, you know, we're not allowed to have rules in the world today. You can't have rules. You can't have a pitch clock. That's caused all the problem, which it just simply has not. But people were complaining about it. You saw a couple other guys going down here. Spencer Strider looks like he's out. Framber Valdez, the big horse for the Astros, he now has inflammation in his elbow. He lost Shane Bieber last week. Somebody else, too, another big name that was out for the season. But, yeah. You need to reevaluate these at a young age, and you know, coaches just don't care anymore. Coaches only care about winning at such a young age. It's disgusting what they do to these kids. They take advantage of them, and the parents are usually too stupid to realize it. So, if you know anybody that's playing Little League baseball and they're a pitcher, just do not let them throw curveballs. There's no need. No one cares that little Johnny at 9 years old can strike out somebody on a breaking ball in a Pinto or a Mustang or Bronco game. No one gives a shit about that. So if you do care about that, then you have a problem. You should be teaching these kids the fundamentals of the game, showing them how to get better, showing them how to work hard, showing them how to be good teammates, showing them how to persevere when things aren't going well. Those are the things you learn from Little League sports, not whose velocity is better and whose curveball is better. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. And that's why we have this problem, because a lot of these pitchers nowadays are guys who came up in the travel ball circuit, and your parents carted them around everywhere. They were the kings of the world from a young age, and they're throwing hard, and they're doing this. They're throwing 100 miles an hour in the first inning, which is just stupid. Like, guys, like the older generation of pitchers used to stretch the arm out as the game went on. Your best guys were throwing, Nolan Ryan and these guys, even Justin Verlander, throwing 97 in the first inning, and by the end of the game, he's throwing up around 100. So there's something to be said about that. These veterans that know how to pitch. Nowadays, these guys are just getting abused at a young age, and shame on the coaches that put them there. Greg Maddux threw like 89, and he was one of the best pitchers ever. Location, location, location. It's all that mattered to him. He could hit spots. No one else wants to teach that method right now because it's not cool. If you don't break the radar gun, then you're not getting recruited and you're not getting drafted and all that bullshit. So you can do both. You should practice on doing both. So anyway, there's my rant about MLB pitching. I do not feel sorry for these guys, but I do feel sorry for them to a degree. At their young age, they were abused, and that's not cool. But well, observations after a week and a half of baseball. Some of the teams we think are going to be good are going to be good. Some of the ones that people think are going to be good are not going to be good, as the, you know, the cream rises to the top, so to speak. But it's a long season. Things are going pretty well according to what people would speculate right now. Pirates doing all right, but they blew a game yesterday. Bad managing, I thought. Bednar comes and blows a save. He's been very shaky. I don't know why you would take Martin Perez out of the game right there. He's throwing very well. It's one thing if Bednar had been locked in and pitching well. I just don't think you chance that in a close game like that, and Tigers get four and beat them. Orioles bringing up Jackson Holliday today. We'll see how that goes. Orioles haven't been quite as good as I hoped for, but they'll continue to improve. I don't think hitting Cedric Mullins sixth in the lineup is a good idea. I think he should be up on top. When he gets on base, it's a really good thing, and they got a lot of guys that can drive him in behind or hitting behind him. So I think that's something that's been good. Dodgers haven't hit as well as everybody thought. Although I did capitalize on them the first week of the season with some of their run totals over. But an area that I'm starting to concentrate on, and feel free to take a peek and explore, and you know, call in with questions on the radio show or shoot us an email. Contact at the Pine Room Studios contact at the Pine Room Podcast.com. You can email me. You're starting to see these markets opening up for team total runs in a certain amount of innings, whether it's the first inning, the third inning, the fifth inning, seventh inning. I've had a little bit of success there. I've had some success on team totals. Sometimes these things are priced a little differently. So if you're fading a starting pitcher that you don't like, or there's somebody that really matches up against lefties and this lefty's not been very good, look to take those runs early. I've really, really got some great value, some plus prices. Braves to score more than 2.5 runs in the first five innings. I mean, it's Atlanta Braves, for God's sakes. I mean, a murderous lineup. You almost could bet that blindly every day, and you probably would turn a profit on it. But if you don't like a starter, you want to try to play those early in the game, because sometimes teams will have better bullpen than they have starting pitching, and you won't get as much off the bullpen late, and maybe the starter you get beat around early. You can win a bet very quickly. I don't like betting the runs in the first inning until I have enough data. Those things are strong bets. The Nerfies and the Yerfies, yes, run in the first inning, no run in the first inning. Those can really, in probably by the middle of May, end of May, we'll have good data on those, good data points of who is good at those, who is not. And then you can start looking for matchups and exploit those. But right now, I think there's a lot of value to be had out there for the runs team totals. That's Atlanta Braves or whoever, X team, to score over this amount of runs in a certain amount of innings. Now, I like the ones in the five innings because I feel like five innings is a pretty good start to the game that you can score some runs. A lot of times teams will jump out on a pitcher. Pitcher doesn't settle in very well early. You get a couple off them in the first, and then you only need maybe one more. So if you're posting 2.5 on the Braves, they had them against the Mets the other night at plus 120. I mean, these are silly bets. Dodgers today, which did not cash, actually. They had runners on in the first inning, and they got one run. But Dodgers over 2.5, first five was plus 115 or something. So look for those, as well as the chances that you can find good offensive teams. Atlanta, Baltimore, Dodgers, those kind of teams. I don't even know if I want to call the Yankees a good offensive team yet. I'm not ready to go there yet. But when you start to identify some of the better offensive clubs, start finding those early innings, the fifth inning. I mean, you're finding 2.5 sometimes against these teams. Last night, Arizona, 3.5. Now, it ended up being a 3-2 game. That's not always going to happen at Coors Field. 3.5 runs in the first five innings at Coors Field. That's not going to happen very often. Now, it did go against me last night, but very, very profitable so far for me. I haven't felt confident enough about putting these out as regular plays, but once I continue to study these a little bit more and figure out some angles that we can take advantage of, I will post those BLS_PRP on Twitter and X to try to get people on board with these. But you got to start looking into markets inside the markets. These favorites are priced too high. You got teams minus 280, $3. It's ridiculous. Giants the other night, two in a row they've lost to the Nationals, who I still think are going to be a scrappy team. So don't discredit Washington. But you're getting opportunities. You have so many other offerings. In the old days, you had three options. You had money line, you had total, you had run line. That was it. Then they started to expand. They gave you first five. Now they're giving you runs every single inning, pretty much, or at least every other, the odd number innings. You're getting team totals. You're getting strikeout props. You're getting hitting props. You're getting total bases. You have so many different angles you can exploit. So I like to build the narrative in my mind of how the game will go, look at the pitching, look at the lineup, and then start saying, like, okay, I like this part about this game. What can I exploit from that? So you go through each game, and you start finding. There's going to be games that you're going to say, I don't like anything in this game at all. I got all these options. I don't like anything there. I'm going to pass on it. But there are opportunities out there to take better value than just betting the big giant dogs, because you're not going to win anything. And when you lose, you're down 3, 4, 5 units in one bet. You can do things like pitcher to get a win or pitcher to go deep in a game. If there's a team, so for instance, tonight I think Dylan Cease pitches for the Padres. He's a pretty good favorite. They're not a giant favorite, but maybe 165, 170. But you can go find Dylan Cease to get a win at plus money. So if you think the Padres are going to win that game, chances are Dylan Cease will pitch 6, 7 innings. So he'll be in line to probably win the game. So take that approach. You can do his out totals over, get him over 16 outs or 16 and a half or 17 and a half, whatever it's going to be. You can find other ways for better prices to get the same result, which would be a Padres victory. Most of the time, that's going to lend itself. And then those pitching ones, if the Padres bullpen blows it and you got him over his outs, you're good. You're winning already cash. So take a look at those angles. Don't go out there and bet minus $3 on the Braves every night, -$3 on the Yankees or the Orioles or any of those teams, because you lose one and you got to win three times to make it up for it, a minimum of three times. So definitely something you want to look into. But if you got more questions about that, Pine Room on the Watchdog every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. Check it out, and I'll be happy to take your calls and talk about it. Let's jump into the Masters now. That's the hot topic. We got a lot of people coming out make predictions on this tournament. Masters, I know I'm probably in the minority here, but the Masters is not, I want to say, my least favorite of the majors, but it's probably the third least favorite. I don't like the PGA normally either, because the course usually plays easy, and it's just, I don't know. For whatever reason, that one's just always been weird to me. U.S. Open, you got the great rough, you got the hardest courses, you have barely being able to play under par golf. The Open Championship, British Open for the layman, great, great scenery, awesome weather in my mind. Really can test a guy. Now, the courses do play pretty easy for the way these guys hit them now, but not all of them. And in unique bunkers and just a lot of different unique things that we don't see in American golf. A lot of the links courses, really cool stuff. But the Masters, it's the same stuff. It's the same course, it's the same holes. You know them, Amen Corner, you know, Race Creek, you know all that stuff from just sitting and watching it with your dad or whoever for the years and years and years. But yeah, the course is pretty. Yeah, but I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. I think you really have to find guys when you're betting this who play well at Augusta. You're not going to see guys sneak up. I mean, Tiger Woods won this a couple years ago at a decrepit age. Like he, and people were betting him again this week. Now, we did see that a lot of books, there's people fading him too. But our book, we're taking a lot of Tiger action. So I guess it's kind of mixed what you think is going to happen. But it's just, it's the same stuff. It's the same guys year after year. It's Phil Mickelson, T-second last year. I'm cool with that once in a while, and there's an advantage out there for you here. You got guys at giant prices who are either they're left-handed and they've won here before, or they're just up-and-comers who have been in the top 10 a lot. There's a lot of different avenues you can hit when you're trying to find players here, but I wanted to at least go through a couple of things players to not take. But you know, since the tournament's already going to start by the time this airs, I'm going to post my picks on the site the Twitter page, so you can check those out. But Masters rookies don't win. Fuzzy Zeller, the only time that the rookies won, or the last time a rookie's won. Highly ranked players win. So you got 17 of the last 24 winners been in the top 12 in the world golf ranking. So that's key. Two top 12 finishes heading in the calendar year. So you got a lot of guys that didn't hit that criteria. So you can eliminate. You can start chunking out. This goes for any golf tournament. You go find these X factors in these Past 11 champions have ranked near the top in par four scoring, so that's an important part of it. Defending champ has only won one time, and since 2002, that was Tiger. Phil did go back-to-back win in the tournament before this in 2006. And 13 of the last 18 winners here have had past top 10. So where does that leave us? I'm going to give you a few guys that I think are worth a peek. But again, these it's really tough because you're getting so many different opinions out here. You have talking heads on the TV, which I advise people to not listen to. And I'm trying to find my sheet here. Here we go. So I thought that things look kind of like this. So kind of some of the top players that I thought were lead contenders here, John Rahm, obviously coming in off LIV. To me, he's really the only guy that can equal Scottie Scheffler currently. Brooks Koepka absolutely can, but I have him in the unknown category. The top players that I like this week are John Rahm, Joaquin Niemann, who's around 18-19 to 1. Hideki Matsuyama has been playing great. I'm not sure if he can win this again. His number's down to 14-1. I don't love that. Patrick Reed played very well here. He's 45-1 coming in off the LIV tour. He's played pretty well here. He's T4 last year. He's had back-to-back top 10s on LIV, so that's promising. Xander Schauffele, Shane Lowry, and Tony Finau. These are guys who I think are really good. Shane Lowry obviously won the Open Championship. He tied 16th here last year. Played the course very well. Xander Schauffele, top 10 last year here. It's been about as good as you can find, but he can't close. So that worries me, and taking him at 12-1 is just not good enough. Shane Lowry at 35, I can get behind that a little bit. Tony Finau, another guy, he just can't close. And when you can't close at Augusta, it's a problem because you got so many tricky holes on the back nine that you can hit bad shots. You can have just mental meltdowns. So I want to try to get behind these guys, but it's really, really hard. Tony Finau's form has been pretty good. He was a T26 last year. He's had success here. He was in the, I think he might have been in the final pairing a couple of years ago, but good performance, but I just don't know if I can get behind him. So you're going to have to take the choices that you want to make here and decide, but those are kind of the top guys. Rahm, Niemann, Matsuyama, kind of my top guys, and Patrick Reed, Xander, Lowry, and Finau. Guys who are in the question mark category who could really play well here. Will Zalatoris, his form's dipped though, so I'm a little bit worried about him, so I'll probably not play him. Brian Harman missed the cut last year. He's left-handed, so that usually sets up pretty well. Justin Rose, I think he could have a good round. He has not played in several weeks. Kind of went through a little rut. Rose does very well though off rest. He's like a horse that comes back strong off rest, which not all of them do. Phil Mickelson, wild card. He's 130-1. He's played great here before. He's T2 last year. Even in an old age, I think him against Tiger in matchups is a great bet. They'll be matched a lot. Brooks Koepka can easily win this tournament. I don't know what his form's been like. He was T2 last year. His LIV form's just been so-so, but he's not, I don't think he's as dialed in as he wants to be. And then another question mark guy who can easily win this. So if I know these guys are in good form, I'm playing Koepka and Cameron Smith. They might be my top two picks along with Joaquin Niemann and then probably Rahm, but I don't like Rahm's price. So Koepka and Cam Smith would be guys that I would absolutely be betting. I just don't know if their form is good enough right now. I know they're playing the LIV Tour. It's a better tour, no question, but it's just a different layout and style. So can these guys find the intensity they need to be able to win this? I think they can. Both of them played really well here, so they're pretty decent prices. Koepka 13-1 a few years ago. He killed for that. Cameron Smith arguably was on his way to being the best golfer in the world and then join the LIV Tour, and you don't really hear about him as much now unless you follow that, but he's around 24-1. So I think shots with those guys, really, really good. Dustin Johnson, his form has not been good. You get him around 25-30-1. I mean, he's got he has the pedigree, but I just think DJ was happy to take his LIV golf paycheck and just be done with it. He's just kind of having fun out there. I wouldn't recommend backing him, but I sure wouldn't be surprised if he put it together and got some momentum going. I mentioned Justin Rose. I think Matt Fitzpatrick, if the weather plays bad here, Shane Lowry, Matt Fitzpatrick, Jason Day, those are some guys that move up. Cameron Smith, some of the Aussies, Adam Scott, who I have on here is one of my safer bets that I'll get to. But those guys really elevate. So if you're playing early Thursday, Friday matchup, obviously this you won't get on Thursday, but if the weather's bad into the weekend, take a shot with some of these. The Aussies, the guys from the UK, minus Rory McIlroy, you don't want to waste time with him. He's way, way, way underpriced or overpriced, however you want to look at it. But he's trash, and you probably should not play him under any circumstance. He's just not going to win at less than 7-1. I mean, are you kidding me? He's not even the 25th best golfer in this field, and he's bet like he is. And I never understand that. I can understand people betting Tiger. He was dominant and people loved him. But Rory McIlroy just baffles me. So you got Scottie Scheffler around 2.5, 3 to 1. Ridiculous to make that bet. But a lot of people are saying it's a guaranteed lock. So I don't know. If you want to go that route, try it out. That's not going to be for me. So if you're into betting the favorites, you're probably not going to get any value out of this, out of listening to me talk about it. A couple other guys I want to get to, mention DJ. Chris Kirk playing really well right now, 110 to 1. He's got really good form coming in here. Great on the par fours. Cameron Young, 30 to 1. He was actually lower than that last year coming into the Masters. He was a kind of a hot name people were playing on. So a couple of guys there to keep in mind. And, you know, Sahith Theegala. I think he could be dangerous here. He was T9 last year in his first go round. A lot of times guys get better as they play a little bit longer here. He's 31 to 1, and then Nick Taylor 130 to 1. I like his numbers coming into this as well. But you got a lot of guys who have had great course history here, and I built a couple of bets that I thought were very, very good. If you're just looking for things to just be safe bets plus money, not giving you out any minuses here. So top 20s, I thought Patrick Reed at plus 190 was a great bet. Cameron Young plus 140. Shane Lowry plus 150. Cameron Smith plus 150. Those are top 20. Those are T20. You finish in the top 20, and you can tee at the 20. So if you tie five ways and you're in 19th or 20th, you will still get that one. They will. Some of the places do have dead heat rules, so you got to keep in mind that is applied at certain books, but a lot of them are going away from that now, which is great. Top 30s, Chris Kirk plus 150, Adam Scott plus 115, Justin Rose plus 165. Adam Scott's great at this course. I trust him a lot to be in the top 30, and you could parlay these too. I'm not much of a parlayer, but if you want to throw a few bucks on these, you can parlay four or five guys here at plus money. Build yourself a nice little one, throw a few tickets in for the weekend, and see what happens. But this is a course, if you can find guys who are in decent form and have the course pedigree, you can really do well, because you can see guys play well above their actual prime playing days here at Augusta, which kind of makes it good, but it also kind of makes it bad. It's one of the criticisms I do have. Phil Mickelson, one of those guys, plus 115 for a top 40. I think it's a great bet. And then you got some really old guys here. Zach Johnson, top 40. Now, only 53 guys made the cut here last year. Only 11 guys didn't finish in the top 40 with ties. So you had almost the entire group that made the cut. So if you're able to make the cut, you got a great shot at top 40. Plus 115 for Phil Mickelson. Plus 165 for Zach Johnson, a defending champ. Fred Couples plus 650. A couple of years ago, Fred Couples was in the top 10. He made the cut again last year, deep into his 60s. So look for those plus money guys. Look for that value. If I have to go with somebody to win this tournament. Oh, I didn't mention Bryson DeChambeau. So I thought a few weeks ago that I liked him, but then I watched the last couple of live events with him, and he has not played very well. Could he surprise? Maybe. But if I have to go with a guy who's going to win this, I'm going to probably lean towards Brooks Koepka. I think him for the value at 13 to 1, I'm going to go with him. So I'll go Koepka as my number one play, Patrick Reed as my number two play, and Joaquin Niemann as my number three play, with Cameron Smith being my fourth best play. So I'll post all these on the Twitter page. I'll post anything that I like for the weekend as well, so you can keep up on those. And a couple of matchups too. If you see these guys match up later in the rounds, I would go. Patrick Cantlay's not been good. Fade him a little bit. I liked Zalatoris against him, but Zalatoris has been a little bit rough. Tyrrell Hatton hates his course. He bitches about it all the time. You're going to want to fade him. You're going to want to fade Rory McIlroy. Totally want to fade him. Russell Henley, I think, is a guy pretty good in matchups. I don't trust him to do any damage, but he could be good in matchup. Siwoo Kim, be on him. He's been very good at this course over the years. I like Xander Schauffele over Rory McIlroy. That's a specific matchup. I like Joaquin Niemann against Wyndham Clark. I don't hate Wyndham Clark here, but it's his first Masters, so I don't know how well he'll do. I would take Rahm at plus 165 against Scheffler. That could be a matchup that's matched every day heading into the weekend. Adam Scott against Ricky Fowler, minus 125. Wow, that's a steal if you ask me. Obviously, Phil against Tiger. I think that's a great bet. And then Cam Young against Sam Burns. I don't like Sam Burns here at all this week. I think he could be a good fade material. So I'll be against Rory. I'll be against a couple of those other guys that I mentioned there. Patrick Cantlay. Victor Hovland, a guy I'm a big fan of. He's changing his swing. He got rid of one of his coaches, so he's adjusting some stuff here. I don't like playing on guys like that, so stay away from him this week, definitely. But you can play Tiger this week. He's actually at a good enough price that I would say throw a few dollars on him if he can make the cut, or top 20, top 30. It's better than what he usually is. And then, I mean, if you're going to have to make a choice between betting Tiger or Rory McIlroy, bet Tiger every day of the week. I think that goes without saying. So, anyway, best of luck. Enjoy the Masters. Hopefully it is an exciting non-Scotty Scheffler runaway. I like Scotty Scheffler. I got no issue with him at all, but I would like to see some other guys win from time to time. But we can't really control that. A couple tidbits before we get to Aussie rules. UFL. The United Football League, that's the XFL and the USFL that just merged. It's been interesting. We've had six unders in two overs. And the two overs, only one of them, actually one of them made it over by about a touchdown. The other one only made it over by like a point and a half, depending on the number that you got. So I'm not, still don't know the teams well enough, but I have watched a little bit of this. Definitely trending towards the unders. So if you're seeing these games around the 40s in the hooks, 41 in the hook, unders are still looking pretty valuable, but you want to make sure that you're not matching up two of the better offensive teams, because the defensives have prevailed here. The kicking games have been a little bit better than I expected, so that's been a little bit of a wrinkle that I wasn't counting on. But unders, it's a really strong percentage right now, 6 out of 8. So keep an eye on those. A couple other industry news things right here. As I mentioned, Tiger Woods in some books not taking any action. People are fading to miss the cut. Fading him in matchups, all that kind of stuff, basically banking that he would withdraw. But I think it's still a little bit of value on him right now. I wouldn't recommend it because he could pull out at any point. Scotty Scheffler, as I said, shortest price to win the Masters since Tiger, plus 350 back in 2013. Money coming in on Phil Mickelson. People love to bet him. He's in 100 plus the one. So that will continue to pour in, I'm imagining, all evening. NBA, don't talk much about that for obvious reasons. Giannis got injured last night, so that can definitely throw a wrench into the Bucks' playoff chances. They're going to make the playoffs, but can they win a series? I don't know. Can they win a series without him? I don't know. So keep an eye on that. Maybe time to start fading the Bucks heavy, because they've not played well even with him. And without him, who, boy, I can't imagine how bad it would be. Bad beats. Baseball is brutal. As Nick Bogdanovich from Circa Sports would say, you need a bottle of whiskey and a revolver to bet baseball, and he couldn't be more right about that. It's a grueling, and I like it, but it will test your limits. It will make you question whether you want to wager ever again. But numerous baseball bets, totals and run lines done in by whether premature pitching moves, managers waiting too late to remove a pitcher. So many things go wrong in these games late on, and the extra inning antics and horseplay that goes on. Braves yesterday, for instance, 6-0, they're leading in the 8th inning, a home against the Mets. They won a game 6-5. So not only did they not cover the run line, if you had the Braves minus the 1.5, you'd got the game over as well. So if you were on the other side of those, you're pretty happy. But if you're on the Braves run line and the under, you're so mad. Like it's a 6-0. It's a cruise. Mets just go without a fight, and the Braves. But the Braves bring in some sketchy relievers because they think they don't have to use their good arms in a 6-0 game. Well, guess what? Here we go. All of a sudden, we're sweating at a 6-5. Just brutal. But that happens every single day and night. It's horrible. First team to 10 wins. This one's for Pirate fans. Pirates led 3-1 in the ninth. I mentioned Bednar comes in after Martin Perez had went 8 strong innings. The Tigers couldn't get a guy past second base other than one inning the whole time. And here we go. Leadoff walk, hit batter, turns into a mess. He gets one out. Tigers rally to win it 5-3. So Tigers covered reverse run line, obviously. Pirates were 55-1 to be the first team to reach 10 wins. Well, guess what? They played at 12:35, and some books pay out the actual first, not like the first teams on the same day. They paid the actual first, 55-1. If you had that one, oh, that stings so bad. That's a no-go, as the Pirates did not get the 10th win. Rowdy Tellez comes to Bednar's defense in the locker room after when asked about it. And it sounds like Bednar could be getting demoted from the closer role for Aroldis Chapman, so we'll keep an eye on that. But as I suspected last week, and I still suspect, and I said it on the radio, I don't think the Pirates are that good as their start indicates. I think over time they will play. They're not going to be 500. I'll say just a little south of 500, just barely right in the mix, like 80 and 82 type team. So just playing like 485, 490 type baseball this year, if you ask me. But people are still believing, and we'll talk to Sam and see what his thoughts are on the ball club as they head to Philadelphia next day off today, which is weird. They had a day game yesterday, and then they traveled today. Both teams traveling today. Not far either, which is weird. So, AFL, let's get into that. We were 8-8 last week. A couple of bad beats there that I won't bore people with. Thursday night's game, I like that one over, and the Demons minus a 14.5, but that was already last night, so it won't do you any good here. Friday's games, you get an early Friday morning start. You probably won't get this one either. Western Bulldogs playing pretty well right now. They're 2-2, but they have been in very close defeats in the other games that they did not win. So they won three. They've won the last three against the Essendon Bombers, so I'll take them minus the 15.5. Saints and GWS. It'll be St. Kilda at the Gold Coast, or I'm sorry, the Greater Western Sydney Giants. They are the home team. They're Sydney, Greater Western Sydney minus 19.5, total 164.5. I'm going to go with the GWS Giants here. Road team has won the last five here, though, so that could be interesting with St. Kilda, but St. Kilda just doesn't have any firepower. Lean to the under there, 164.5. Not a strong play, but I lean that way. Adelaide at Carlton. It'll be the Crows and the Blues. Adelaide 0-4, Carlton 4-0. Carlton definitely smoking mirrors. They're kind of a fraud of being 4-0. Adelaide, they only West Coast has scored less than them. That's just sickening. They were a team we backed, and they have not been good at all. But I look for them to get in the win column this week. I think they possibly could win this game plus 23.5, so maybe take a peek at them on the money line. But definitely take them plus the 23.5. I think they'll battle really, really hard in this game and give a good effort against the team. Carlton, it's not really what it's cracked up to be. I like the under 165.5. I think this will be a very close played game. Carlton or Adelaide in desperate need of a win. Saturday games. This is an early Saturday morning start. Hawthorn at Gold Coast. And you got Gold Coast coming in here minus 24.5 against Hawthorn, who was really, really bad. Home team 7-0 ATS the last seven, so that will bode well for Gold Coast. So lay the 24.5 with the Suns. At least I lean that way. That's one of my strongest plays. I like the under 163.5 there. Also Saturday morning, it'll be Fremantle and Port Adelaide. Port Adelaide rolling along 3-1. Fremantle also 3-1, but I don't think they're quite as good. Port Adelaide 6-0 ATS, their last six against Frio. That bodes well. Port Adelaide at home, really, really good. 18. They're good anywhere, but they're very good at home. 18.5 to spread there. So I'll lay the 18.5 with the power. Go over the 167.5. I like that one a good bit. North Melbourne Kangaroos against the Geelong Cats. Geelong hosts North Melbourne. Geelong 4-0. North Melbourne 0-4. Geelong, one of the teams we won with last week, they'll lay 55.5 here. North Melbourne will hang around here for a little while. I wouldn't bet Geelong in the first half, but I think Geelong will eventually just pour it on late. I'd also look at some. You may want to look at Jeremy Cameron to score three or more goals. Maybe Tom Hawkins to score three or more, because these guys they'll pour it on them pretty heavy in the second half. Over 179.5. I think North Melbourne will score a little bit in the first half of this game, so I think it will lend to an over. And then you got an early Sunday start. That Geelong game was a late night Saturday, 11 p.m. our time, and then 2 a.m. our time. So early morning Sunday, late night Saturday, however you want to look at it. It's a battle of two really bad teams. Richmond 1-4 against West Coast. 0-4. West Coast, the team we usually fade. I'm telling you, I'm tempted to take West Coast here, but I really can't do it. Richmond's bad, but West Coast is bad too. Richmond did cover last week, but I can't take West Coast. I don't feel good enough about it. But I did watch the first half of West Coast game last week against, I don't remember if they played Sydney. It might have been Sydney, but they gave a good effort, a really strong effort in the first half. Then they got just blitzed in the second. So I think they're starting to get a little bit of confidence in the West Coast camp. But I like this game under the 173.5. I think West Coast will think they have a shot of winning this game. So I think they'll really, really, really focus in. So that could be a good in-play bet if you see West Coast hanging around here. Can they continue and hold on? Richmond, a little more experience, but both these teams very bad, so I'll go under the 173.5. All those will be posted on our Twitter page, BLS_PRP. All right, we're going to take a break here. We only had one segment. I stretched it out into one. We'll go with Sam coming out of the break. We're going to talk about NASCAR and the other racing circuits. Both of them are off this week. Talk a little, see if he has anything in the golf that he likes. We'll talk some Major League Baseball and some other things as well. And again, thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to IC Cab, as always. Download the IC Cab app today. IC Cab always working. Thanks again to Ricky Zambita for having us up and his continued support. He brought us up to his Four Seasons Simulated Golf and Bar. Beautiful place at the Highlands. Definitely want to check that out. And then Ricky's, if you're looking for flooring, if you had any flood damage, get on out Zambito Flooring America out in Triadelphia. They'll fix you up nice. Get out to the showroom, check it out. Pretty much anything you can walk on, they definitely have it all, as he likes to say in his commercial. So thanks to Ricky. Thanks to all the continued support of all of our sponsors, Figuretti's and Generations for sponsoring Lunch Madness, and our great partnerships with Gumby's and Jill's Gentleman's Club, the Nailers, and so forth, Belmont Brew Works, and on and on and on. We appreciate everything that everybody's done here for the Pine Room, and hopefully we'll be doing more and more. So keep an eye out. May 4th, mark your calendars for the Waterfront Fest Beer Mile down at Waterfront Hall. Should be a heck of a day. You can visit waterfronthall.com for more details, and you can sign up and get your team registered today. We're going to take a break here. BLS. Show number 82 from the Pine Room Studios. We're going to be back in a moment with Sam the Man talking racing and other things sports. It's Better's Last Stand from the Pine Room Studios. Be right back.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 82 from the Pine Room Studios here. Sam joins us now off of a exciting week of NASCAR action. Not so exciting week of Formula One once more, and no IndyCar racing. What a surprise. We continue with another bye week for the IndyCar guys, but that's all right. We're going to talk about NASCAR. We're going to talk a little bit of MLB as well. Sam, welcome to the program. William Byron led the Hendrick contingent last week with a very strong showing at Martinsville. I was hoping that Chase Elliott could get the job done for me, but it didn't happen. What were your thoughts about the race overall?
I saw a lot of negativity about just no passing.
Right.
It wasn't that bad, but it definitely was not too exciting. I mean, I think the first top 14 cars were on the lead lap when it ended, so that's not... Yeah. I don't know. I hate that stuff, but I thought it was all right. But Hendrick, Matt, I think Hendrick has taken a step. They are so far ahead of every other team that it's very blatant right now that who's figured some stuff out and who hasn't.
It is. And I would say going back to the week before's race with Denny Hamlin in that situation, and right now, if Denny Hamlin doesn't have probably still the best pit crew in NASCAR, then I would say that Chevy dominance may have continued even more. I would say that's the one of him, of all the Joe Gibbs cars, he separated himself a little bit as being the best, and they're like the next tier down. But I agree with you. The Hendrick cars right now are just absolute fucking rocket ships, and you can make a case that at any time in that race last week that Byron, Larson, or Elliott had the best car on the track.
Yeah, I mean, they were always up there. Everything last week was just written in stone for Hendrick. Having all those people there, the red, everything was perfect. Worked out well for him.
And then even Alex Bowman bringing up the rear in eighth. So, I mean, he didn't have a bad showing either.
No, he did not.
The same problems continued to arise. Bubba Wallace, you mentioned him last week. He ran pretty well. Ryan Blaney, solid. Logano starting to get a little momentum back. Tyler Reddick. And then you get this drop-off. We mentioned Briscoe. He was okay. Top 10 car. Great call by you on Todd Gilliland. Ran quality laps, and we keep seeing that from him. But when are we going to see Kyle Busch do anything? I really do think it might be done with for him in that team.
I really do, too. It's the worst pick I could have made to pick somebody to win.
But, hey, he only needs to get in by winning a race, so maybe you're still alive there.
I know. I'm still alive till the very end, which is why I love racing. But, man, I don't know if he's in his head. I don't know. RCR is garbage right now.
Austin Dillon 34th. I mean, not even a contender.
Total he shouldn't trash. Even have started the car. He shouldn't even have started it.
No, total garbage.
I don't know what they do, because Kyle Busch, you know, the whole thing was like the sponsors and the money. Well, who's going to want to sponsor this guy that just doesn't have it anymore?
Yeah.
I it's tough. It
and it
stinks.
Is weird, too, because you see Kevin Harvick leaves racing last year, and the guy that's gone into his team, Josh Berry's run respectable. So, I'm starting to think this might be a Richard Childress issue more so than even a Kyle Busch issue, but he backed the wrong horse. I don't know if he had other options of where he could have went. Maybe this was the only option he had at the time. But
I know, honestly, it could have been.
He I don't know. This has not worked out well for either of them. But if you're Childress, you can't really fire him because your stuff has been awful and your other driver's been even worse. And then if you're Kyle, you may not have anywhere else to go. So
yeah, they are in quite a pickle.
Yeah, we'll see if they pick it up as the season goes on, and by the time we come back to some of these tracks for a second time, maybe they'll be a little bit better. But good Lord, I mean, Austin Dillon, I mean, he honestly would lose his ride if it wasn't his grandpa. I mean, it is an embarrassment.
Done. I mean, yeah, he would have been done.
You got Carson Hochevar outperforming him like massively. I mean, all these young guys, Gregson's kicking his ass. Michael McDowell whips his ass every single week. Obviously, Todd Gilliland, who's been a great find for us this year. He's been great. And Ty Gibbs obviously just gets better and better. But yikes. I don't. Kaz Grawla outperforming him regularly now. I mean, that's Austin Dillon needs to really. He better knock off the reality show shit and worry about driving a race car again. But. Ugh.
And the crazy thing is, Matt, is he's not sponsored by like a mom and pop pharmacy. No. Like he has Bass Pro Shop.
Monster sponsor.
Huge.
Yeah. And Bass Pro Shop sponsors two damn cars in the series, like regularly with him and Martin Truex. I mean, they're as big as it gets in NASCAR. Like that is like the most, other than like beer sponsors, that's the most NASCAR-esque sponsor that we have out there. No
right. All these other sponsors, just like, I don't know who, there's like all these financial shit and
right.
like.
Get a lot of those local ones.
He is like one of the mainstream. This is a racing sponsor that I love, and it's just he's garbage.
He is, and a lot of those people that like to hunt and fish, they probably like him because he's driving a number three too, which is
right. I know
warms a lot of people's hearts, but my God, Dale Earnhardt's got to be rolling over in his grave watching this guy perform. He's defiling the number three. That's for
sure. It's an embarrassment. Mm. It's an absolute embarrassment.
So on we go to Texas. Now, this is a little bit interesting this year because Texas gets a race much earlier in the schedule than we've had the last couple of years. This has been a fall race the last 2 years going on in September. Now we move it up to the spring. Back when they used to have two races, they had one in the spring and the fall. Texas is a speedway that I've been up and down on. When it first came out, I thought it was very good. And then it got really dangerous where you had guys dying there and stuff. And like it was getting like, wow. So they reconfigured it, and then I thought it sucked. And then since these new cars have come around, I thought that it's made Texas a little bit better. So I'm willing to continue to be positive heading in here. William Byron, the defending champion, he comes in off of a win. And then Tyler Reddick won the year before that. You got some guys with strong performances, some people who, you know, had run well. William Byron both times in the top 10 in the last two races. Obviously, Kyle Larson. Always going to be dangerous. He had one bad run, but his car was really good that day. He had some sort of mishap that wasn't indicative of his car. Who's looking solid to you heading into Texas this weekend?
I realistically have four names of winners that I think could do it, and the last one is my pick to win.
Okay.
But the first is Kyle Larson.
All right. Can't go wrong with that pick.
No, never. Tyler Reddick.
I like that. Yep.
Ryan Blaney. And then my pick to win it is Brad Keselowski.
Oh, you won't believe it. I have the very same guy picked as my winner, too. So this can only turn out one way. Well, one time we're going to get lucky and both of us are going to win.
It's this time. Right. We're getting it this weekend, Matt.
I love it. He's my guy. I had one guy highlighted in orange as my top pick, and that's Brad Keselowski.
He's
looking at his numbers here. He's run really well in the top 10 his last two times. And I also thought that was really a key point to me because the RFK guys, especially his first year, he was not very good. And it took him a while to get settled. And he was having, but he still ran really well in this race. So that to me says, okay, they've improved a lot. He got better last year and then he had some momentum. They didn't race very well last week. That's for sure. But I really like it. I think he's due, and I thought the price made sense. You're getting him 25-1 or better, 26-1 for a guy who's had some success here, and I love that. I absolutely love that pick. Brad was my top guy, and then I tell you, I really struggled to find a kind of a level B pick, so I was leaning between two guys that I wanted to get your opinion on. I had Chris Bell circled around 12-1 and Ross Chastain at 14. What do you think of either one of those guys' chances?
Yeah, I like Chastain, and then I even had Alex Bowman as a potential, just because he's been quiet.
Yep.
He's been there. He hasn't ran too well at Texas, but just for how good Hendrick has been and how bad other teams have been,
right?
His value's pretty good, but I like the Chastain a lot, because he needs one. He needs a win, because his teammate's in.
Yes, he does. And I do think that'll come. I mean, I thought Chastain was, you know, he was respectable last week. His finish isn't quite, you know, a sign of how his car was last week. I thought he was decent. So, yeah, I think he's probably going to win a race. But, yeah, the longer it goes, the more pressure gets to him. A couple of long shot guys I thought were decent. Ooh, yeah. Eric Jones has run really well here. Mm-hmm. 11.8 yep. average, 7 top 10s. He's 71-1. I mean, could we have a situation one time? I was thinking about this the other day, and it's really been obvious. It seems like these cars that are qualifying well and have speed early in the week, they're just winning these races. We're not having any fuel mileage situations or race off pit roads because of late caution, maybe just because Denny Hamlin did do that the week before, but it had other factors as well. But it seems like we haven't had any like way under the radar winner yet. And I thought maybe Eric Jones this week. I even thought Daniel Suarez had a look, and Chase Briscoe, who ran well last week, I thought maybe deserved a look.
Matt, you just read off my damn sleeper list. I have Jones, Briscoe, and Suarez, all sleepers. This is bad news that we're on the same page.
Yeah, we're in trouble. So people better get on the other people that we didn't pick. Good
Don't
Lord.
Don't listen to a damn word we say.
Well, I hope it turns out better than that for us. But, yeah, we're definitely dialing in on the same type of guys here. And, you know, I think some of these guys have some momentum. Eric Jones, he's one of those guys that, like, if he could just have a break in a race, but I don't know. These Hendrick cars might be too good, and then whenever they're not good enough, maybe Denny Hamlin's too good. I just don't know. Can we have a dark horse winner ever?
I think, but, like, everything needs to go wrong. Yeah. Like, Hendrick has to run bad. The Fords have to just, you know, the fast Fords have to be slow.
Right.
It's like when Ricky won the 500. Like, I think that was kind of lucky. I think Jones could do it.
Yeah,
but
everything's
got to come into play.
Yeah, and in those races like the 500, you have the more volatility where you can have cars collected just because. Right. So that takes a little bit of them out. But man, when these Hendrick cars are locking in, I mean, nothing's going wrong with them. They're just so dialed in. So I can't blame anybody for taking short prices on Kyle Larson or even William Byron, who's a defending champion. You know, neither one of us are picking because it's tough to win back-to-back, but who could blame anybody for taking him? Who could blame anybody for taking Elliott at 14-1? He hasn't won in a while, and he's not been great at this track. And then, like you said, Bowman has had some momentum in around 25-1. So, yeah, if you're just betting Chevy and Hendrick every single week and you just bet the whole stable, you're probably doing okay so far. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to Texas 3:30 on Sunday. Should be a good one. We'll keep an eye on qualifying and see if anything else sticks out for the weekend. Heading over to F1 now. They're off this week. Max returns to victory lane, or to the podium, so they say, in that racing circuit. They go 1-2 at Japan, at Suzuka. Sergio Perez runs second. Max leads 48 laps. You commented to me via text over the weekend just about how boring these races really are. They're not. It's sad too. It's just all the hype, all the build up, and it's just like you already know what's going to happen.
Right. And the saddest part is I got the Yuki Tsunoda top 10.
Yes, a great call.
But based off of a pit stop, right. You know, he didn't do anything on track.
Yep.
It was just based off a pit stop, which is great for the team, but that's not the excitement that I'm looking for.
Yeah, and he just basically held Pat. Like he was in that spot, and he started 10th and he finished. He did the Lance Stroll.
Yeah. Yes, he did. And he needs to go too. I've seen a bunch of articles this week that Stroll has got to go.
Yeah, he is. They're getting nothing out of him. I mean, he's a waste. Fernando Alonso, another solid run, top 6 for him. Like you said, Yuki ran pretty well. McLaren was okay. I needed them double top 6, and Piastri just not enough. George Russell ran well, as you indicated. You thought he would be the better Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton, I think he's just going to be probably just a cut outside the top 6 almost every race the rest of the year. What do you think?
Yeah, it sure seems like it. It seems like he's done, mentally done. He's kind of being
checked out.
Seems like a baby.
Yep, I agree. Nothing this week. We head to we stay in Asia. We're going to China next week. Shanghai. And then we'll be back for the Long Beach Grand Prix. I forget he was even on the IndyCar teams. It's been so damn long since I saw a real race. But
Yeah, I'll have to get a refresher on the IndyCar.
Yeah,
Jesus.
And then maybe we'll probably have that race, and then they'll be off till the 500 in May, probably.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're probably right, honestly.
Yeah, so we'll talk plenty more F1 next week as we actually in an open wheel, all formats as IndyCar back on the circuit as well next week on April 21st. All right, so let's talk a little Buccos. Let's talk some baseball here. Yesterday, I know it pissed you off and made me mad. So the scenario for me yesterday is I got the Pirate game under and under 7.5, and then we saw what happened yesterday, and it was a very frustrating 5-3 loss. Bednar, a walk, a hit batsman, and a disaster of a ninth inning. Rowdy Tellez coming to his aid after the game. What were your thoughts? I thought Shelty overmanaged there, especially it's different if the dude had been lights out to start the season, but he hadn't been, and I thought it was very risky taking Martin Perez out and bringing him in that situation. What did you think?
Yeah, it's the first thing Shelty's done this year that putting it on the shit list. That's a terrible, terrible move. I mean, Perez, there was no reason for him not to go.
Right.
If he gives up the hit, take him out.
Then you can get him back.
It's like I texted you. They spent $10 million on a guy that has 320-plus saves in his career. And he's always been better than David Bednar.
Always.
And it's not that David Bednar's bad. But Chapman throws 102.
Do you find
and he's
it,
lefty?
Yes. No, I'm totally with you. Do you find it? Now I don't know this, and you're all plugged into the city. You live in the suburbs. So, what is it with the Pittsburgh fandom? So you have a situation. It just seems like this always happens to Pittsburgh guys. Like Bednar's the city's guy. He's got the beer. He's on the commercials. They just adopt him. It sort of just reminds me of like Kenny Pickett and these other people that they get behind to a fault, where Bednar was probably punching above his weight class his entire season last year. They probably should have moved him at the deadline to get something back because his stock would never have been higher. So I just feel like, why are they so, I guess they're just so loyal to a fault to these guys, and it ends up translating into losses.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what it is. It's. I can't even explain it. My confidence is way lower now after this series and after this, just because, like, Matt, watching the Orioles play in person, there is a significant difference between it's just I don't even know the development of these players. Like,
right.
Dude, they're good. Don't let the Orioles 6-4 record fool
you. Oh, no.
They are good.
No, they are good. Jackson Holliday getting their call up, I believe, today. Hopefully he'll be in the lineup. Should be interesting as they are up in Boston. But, yeah you're right.
I don't know why they boo it, Matt. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they were claiming that they were booing Shelton, which
well,
I totally understand.
Me too. But how do they know that at the time? I've never been a guy who's booed my own players before. Ever.
No.
I mean, not that I'm ever in a position
stupid.
To do that. I think it's stupid, but like I'll boo the other team, but that's about all. But yeah, I mean, the managers can piss people off. I get people being upset, but sometimes the fans in the city of Pittsburgh are brutal. They used to boo Sergei Gonchar at games when he was wouldn't they kill to have him back on the power play right now in Pitt for the Penguins? I mean, those morons booed him just because he played for the Caps. Like, they're idiots. There's a lot of idiots, but yeah. So,
the thing I don't understand, if Bednar's hurt,
right?
If he was hurt and missed spring training, send him to the minors to get innings. Get the arm loose. And you know what you do? You bring up Bednar back, you bring up Skeens.
Yes, get Skeens' ass up here now. You got to get him up here immediately. Because, yeah, you saw Holliday gets the call today. It should be Skeens now. Heard somebody say Memorial Day for him, but who knows. We'll see how things go. Because as you and I both know, he'll be coming up after a losing streak. That's when they'll have to do it. Attendance has not been as good as I thought. What was it? What was the attendance like at your game that you went to Saturday?
Both the weekend games were less than 25,000.
And then 10
and
or
Matt,
less the last
majority,
two.
The Orioles fans are loud.
I saw that. I saw a lot of them there.
And, you know, I texted my cousin Zach about it, just being like, I wish that we had a Chicago Cubs-esque crowd that understands that you have to be there, support the team. It's a great place to go watch a game. It felt minor league-ish, to be honest.
I heard a couple other people make similar comments about it, and if that's the case, after a good start, I mean, then what's it going to be like if they go into a slump?
I don't know. I don't know where the people were. The weather was nice. The Orioles are good. The Pirates were good. Like you said, I don't know where the people were. I mean, the Penguins played that afternoon, but I just,
well, they haven't,
I don't know.
Their attendance has been a little bit, it's been a little better the last couple of weeks, as we talked about. They're making a run here to try to push to get into playoffs, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. If people are just outpriced, they're tired, or maybe they're just sick of spending money that Nutting doesn't spend back into the team. So I can get that part a little bit, but they came out on opening day, so there had to be enough people that were willing to come out that day. So why can't you continue to come out?
Right, and I don't know if it's like the excuse of like, oh, they're in school, it's not the summer, this and that. I just think it's piss poor. If you like the team, you go support them.
Right, especially on the weekend. No reason not to.
And these games are flying too, Matt.
Oh, I know.
They're flying.
Yep, that's a good thing, I guess. So thoughts on MLB overall? Anybody sticking out to you? Anybody that's been better than you expected? Anybody who's been worse than you expected?
I have no clue what the hell is going to happen in the AL Central. I mean,
tough one.
The Guardians are 8-2. The Tigers are 7-4. The White Sox stink.
Oh, they're bad. I mean, they'll be the bottom.
Bad.
I think the Royals are actually pretty good in that division. They pitch well. And I think the Tigers are okay. They don't hit either. I do think the Royals have good starting pitching. I've been impressed with them. They played Baltimore, so I watched the games a little bit more intently. And they're good. Their lineup isn't very good. But, man, Bobby Witt Jr. is a really good player.
Very, very good. And then when I go to the AL West, the only question that sticks out in my mind is, I hate to say this, when does Mike Trout get hurt?
Yeah, they've been playing after they got embarrassed the first two games and they had a players-only meeting. They've been okay.
I know, and it's just like he gets hurt. He does this every year. Otani and Trout were so hot last year, and then they both got hurt, and the season was done.
Yeah, that's typical Angels, and they're pitching. Apparently, they have some really good pitching development in the minors that we maybe see in a year or two. But yeah, it's rough. Astros start slow anyway, so that you can't even make an evaluation. You know they'll be there in the end. Mariners have not been quite as good as I expected. I thought they'd start out a little bit better.
Yeah, I did too, and then like.
Texas is
the NL West, the D-backs 4-7, Giants 4-7. The Rockies suck. They're
Rockies are bad. Giants, Bob Melvin, our boy, he's fucking everything up there. Giants lost two in a row to Washington, who I actually think Washington's scrappy enough that they'll give people, you know, a problem here and there. Diamondbacks will come back to earth here. They'll start to play better, I think, as they get settled in. A lot of times these guys, these starting pitchers, their arms aren't ready. They're not stretched out yet. And what are you thinking? Speaking of pitching, the injuries, the amount of guys. We just lost another one. We lost Bieber last week. We're now going to lose Strider. Framber Valdez has elbow inflammation. We already got Garrett Cole on the aisle. I don't think it's the pitch clock, though. They got to stop trying to say that. Because years ago, these guys never had this problem, and they worked very quickly.
Right. I think it's this obsession with the velocity number and how hard you throw.
Yep.
If you're not throwing 98 to 102, then you don't have it. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I don't think Greg Maddux would even be on a team now. They wouldn't even let him pitch because his fastball was like 91 it topped out at. But he got the thing to go exactly where he wanted every time. But I agree. I think throwing the velocity early on in these games, I saw Verlander talking about how he used to ramp up. Like he knew his arm wasn't ready to go full tilt in the first inning. So it built up, and his velocity would increase as the game went on. He thought that was a more healthy way to approach it than going and trying to whip it triple digits right out of the chute.
Yeah, it seems very obvious to me that the clock is just like this. I don't know. I just think they want to try to get rid of the clock or add a certain amount of time to it, and I think the clock should stay exactly the way it is because it's perfect.
It's really helped the game in my mind. It's made the games go quicker, and I feel like people are more engaged. And you don't have those games quite as long dragging on for hours and hours like you used to. It's been nice in the last 2 years. I think that's one of the things MLB's gotten totally right.
Yeah. I mean, like the Pirate game I went to and then the game that Sunday – the first five innings took an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you got to really pay attention and know what's going on. If you've got an hour and five innings, that's quick.
That's great, and that's good for people who have busy lives and the, you know, kids that don't pay attention and so on and so forth. That's a definite positive thing. So, but we got a ton more games to go, so it's early on, and I'm sure we'll be continuing to assess throughout the year. How about hockey? Penguins, they get a point the other night in Toronto. Big game against Detroit tomorrow. What are you seeing right now from them?
I'm seeing them. They're fighting, man. I mean, they're fighting. They're trying hard. They got Ned in net.
Yes.
I just don't know how much they have left. I mean, the Crosby skate thing is absurd. It's fucking absurd. There's no excuse that the best player we've had for the last, whenever he was drafted, was not out there.
Yeah, I know. That's a really bad one. Just, yeah, in a game that you really needed. I mean, yeah, it didn't hurt you losing the extra point to Toronto, but would have been nice to have two there. And they tied it late because, like you said, they have been fighting. But again, the fucking power play over 5 again. Like,
I know.
Score once there and we win the game in regulation, maybe, and you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I realistically think Carlson should go this offseason. He's done nothing.
If they can move him, it probably would be better. I do see him. I can tell, though, he's definitely even picked his game up a touch in the last few weeks because it is weird because, like, the guy's always been super talented, but now you can kind of see urgency in his game for the first time probably in years since he's been on a team that was even around the playoffs. But, yeah, I agree with you, though. For the salary you're paying him, you got to get more out of him, and especially on the power play. He's the guy you brought in to solve it, and it's been worse.
Right. I mean, you can't go from 100 points, and I understand that team was terrible he was on, but he put up 100 points. You don't do that just out of sure luck.
Absolutely not. Nope. NBA aircraft carrier done for the season.
What the hell, man? I couldn't believe it, Matt.
I know.
I couldn't believe it.
So that might derail the Knicks. Giannis goes out last night. I don't know. I guess we'll see who matches in these playing games and so forth. But it's just hard. These NBA's back to backs again tonight. You don't know what you're gonna get. You don't know what team will be out there.
I know. It's like, I love the Celtics, too. I love Coach Mazzulla, but just something about the regular season and then that transition to the playoffs, right. I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think they're vulnerable, and I don't know who could beat them, but somebody, I think.
I know. But every year, Matt, it's like, we know who's going to beat the Celtics. Nobody can beat them. They always lose.
Yes, they do. And last
year,
they choked away against the Heat. And
sure did.
Good stuff. But, all right, Sam, thanks, as always, for your wonderful input to the show. We will see you next week. Enjoy the racing and baseball and hockey the rest of the week.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
And the Masters. Do you have a play on the Masters? Anybody that you like a little? Not really.
I really like Xander.
Yeah.
But I think Scotty is.
He may be too tough.
He's too tough. Isn't his wife about to go in labor?
Yes, she is. So
they really need to bank on that to happen.
Yeah, watch. He'll be up 6 shots and have to leave on Sunday.
Be incredible, Matt.
Yeah,
they'll be
crying at the window about that one. Oh, boy, I can just hear the aftermath. But all right, Sammy, enjoy the weekend. I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you.
Yes, sir, man. Go Bucks.
All right. That's Sam the Man from Upper St. Clair. Great insight, as always, NASCAR and all things sports. We're going to finish up here. Better's Last Dance, show number 82. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Appreciate all the feedback that we get on a regular basis. And hopefully we'll be seeing more of you. Pine Room Studios rolls on here as we head into the spring and summer. Plenty more events out there, so check out at the Pine Room Studios on social media, BLS_PRP, for all of our picks. Until next week, enjoy the Masters, enjoy the baseball, enjoy the hockey. I think basketball's done. Enjoy the AFL, enjoy the racing, all the good stuff that we talked about this week. We will see you next week in the Pine Room Studios for episode number 83 of Better's Last Stand. Have a great weekend. All right, welcome in. Better's Last Stand, back after a Thanksgiving hiatus. Last time we were seen over at Belmont Brew Works, had our buddy Rick on the show. He had us over. It was a great evening. We talked a lot about sports betting on the show, as always, and then had a few drinks and something to eat. So it was a good time. Chris here with me in the studio.
Hello.